Much. It's weird to see you behind the main account.
Oh, I know. This is the first time I've done this on a desktop versus my phone, so it's a little bit slower figuring out how to get people added, but bear with me. We will get all our necessary speakers up here.
It was funny, last time I was on the Twitter space, I couldn't hear certain people talking. So I had my laptop listening to the Twitter space while also having my phone on the Twitter space. It was janky, man. Twitter space has always got something.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I forget what it was. Maybe it was a space like last week, but I realized that you can now have video. Like you can share video. Like I could share my screen on a Twitter space, which is pretty damn cool. Like that's a functionality I always wished that we could have on Twitter spaces personally. I saw Simon was in here a minute
ago.
I'm trying
to figure out how I can have myself and the main account, but I might have to speak off this one.
Yeah, it's if you wanted to have the Eclipse up here just to, you know, so people can see it and then join from personal account, you're welcome to do that. You can also just do it from the Eclipsefy account.
Both. How do I do that though? How do I have both?
I think you would have to have two different devices.
Yeah, I'm not mistaken. Desktop thing.
I gotcha. Did anyone hear any music when they first joined the space? Thumbs up for yes, thumbs down for no. Damn. All right.
I could have just been late too.
I didn't hear anything whenever I started it, so I assumed that there was no music. It's all right. I think I am gonna just commit to the Shade soundboard and just have my mic on and just, you know, be able to handle our own soundboard. So it'll make it more interesting.
I'm just going to speak from Eclipsefy. It'll work.
Sounds good. Sounds good. And this is Simon behind Eclipsefy. Right?
It's the Chad, yes. It is Simon.
Nice.
He's like a midnight nice. On this side of the world.
Well, give us one more minute. We're going to make sure to share this link around to a few other places, and then we'll get this thing kicked off. Just give me another 60 seconds or so.
You said Shade soundboard, and I immediately thought of this.
Yes, yes, that's exactly what we need. It adds a little bit of extra levity to our spaces that I think you won't find in a lot of other spaces. So,
I feel like every time Simon talks, he's always got mic drops. There's just a constant air horn sound following him around.
Yep, yeah, trap horn just going off every time we drop Alpha. The Alpha horn. Yeah, maybe we, yeah. Okay. I think I want to roll with this. But for today, unless Carter has a soundboard at his disposal, we will go go all organic today. I really appreciate everyone joining us here today. This is going to be a phenomenal conversation. We had a really, really awesome conversation last week with the folks at Silent Swap. And Secret, and we had a phenomenal turnout, and everyone was really excited about what's to come. And I think that we're going to be able to match or potentially exceed that excitement with what we're talking about today for Eclipsefy. So just to quickly set the room for anyone listening live, for anyone listening to the recording, I want to welcome everyone to another really exciting Shade Weekly Twitter Spaces, where we discuss all the updates in Alpha for Shade Protocol ecosystem. My name is Red Eye Bear behind the Shade account, and today I'm joined by Carter as well from Shade Side. And this week we're joined by another killer guest. We're going to be continuing to bring the heat with our guest today from EclipseFi. I want to welcome you, Simon.
Hey, legends. How's it doing? How's it going?
It's a beautiful day. I don't know what it is, but it feels like the past month, every Wednesday when we do these Shade Twitter Spaces, it's beautiful outside, and it just pumps me up full of energy before we start these spaces. So really happy to be chatting with you today.
Likewise. Looking forward to digging into, yeah, a whole bunch of things. I guess like our partnership and everything going on, but also like, I always like having conversations with you guys. It's always extremely insightful, educational. Like, you know, you want to spend your time around people that help stimulate your brain. And so always love spending time with you guys. I'm really looking forward to this space.
Yeah, honestly, these spaces are one of the things I look forward to most in my week, because getting to talk with, you know, really intelligent people outside of our own organization, outside of our own layer one, is always really interesting. It gives us a chance to get a pulse check on what's going on outside, you know, private DeFi. It also gives us a chance to kind of reconnect with, you know, some of these other groups that we've got partnerships and really good relationships with. And yeah, that's going to be the focus of our conversation today. To kick this off, I do want to get some introductions in. Simon, since you're behind the EclipseFi account, would you like to give a quick introduction to yourself, and then maybe a high-level overview of what EclipseFi is in order to prime the rest of our conversation?
Yeah. So I am Simon. I'm co-founder of EclipseFi, and I'm a literal nutcase. Okay, I'm kidding. I've been in the space since 2016. So I've been around for quite some time. And even when we look at the last like kind of dip, it's like, I mean, for those who've been in the space for a long time, it's like, oh, this again. You know, you've been through it like so many times, you kind of get desensitized or just used to it. But I've been around. I've seen like so many narratives. I joined 2016, went through kind of ICO boom, got scammed a couple of times, made a lot of money, lost a lot of money. Went through the BitMEX trading days, the first early days of leverage, through the bear market, invested a lot of altcoins I thought were promising that ended up going minus 99%. and then, we stayed around the space, got into DeFi summer, got really, really interested in the potential for the finance on the blockchain and everything that DeFi talked about, removing the middleman, and then, you know, really digging into a lot more of what the blockchain can do for solving the need for trust and solving the intermediary issues that Web2 has. So we've always been a huge believer in blockchain, even if it hasn't always been utilized to its fullest potential. And then, you know, obviously got involved in the Terra ecosystem, came into Terra. We was really a big believer in Terra, even though the model was kind of inherently flawed at a fundamental level. I think the vision was very powerful, which was kind of accumulation of everything in, and all my beliefs in DeFi and permissionless money. And so I was helping to build the education for the Terra ecosystem. I was working also with a DeFi protocol that, you know, didn't pan out there as well, but the educational piece was a very passionate part for me. Fast forward, I Terra collapsed, got pretty wrecked, and then started building EclipseFi. I think the biggest thing that drew me to building EclipseFi and sort of our North Star for everything is, I'm a huge believer in innovation within the space, a huge believer in, you know, what blockchain can do for the world. But it's not always, it's not always utilized that way or always like used to its true potential. There's a lot of very smart people out there, a lot of very smart builders that don't always have necessarily the ability to navigate go-to-markets. Maybe they're not great marketers. Maybe they're not great at promoting what they're building. And also they have to navigate like this sea of predatory issues and other things that are completely external to what they're trying to build and what they're trying to achieve, such as, you know, whenever you're going into like go-to-market with Web3 and tokens and everything like that, you have to navigate launch pads and central exchanges and market makers and all this, or everyone who's trying to extract as much value from you as possible rather than adding value. And so for us, I guess launches, funding, go-to-market strategies that is based on long-term and sustainability. Sure, understanding marketing, understanding narratives and everything, but really takes the builders first and the long-term focus of what we're trying to do, rather than trying to launch pump and dumps, really trying to think of like, how can we launch businesses? How can we launch protocols that are around, here to stay around? And how do we help ensure that we're creating an environment that sustains that, as opposed to something that is architected to be the opposite, which is what a lot of the space is doing, which architects systems for extraction as opposed to optimizing for long-term sustainability. So Clipsfy was born. We are building a launch. I don't like to call it a launch pad. I like to call it a launch hub because that's the direction that we're going in. Based in the Cosmos ecosystem with a home base on Neutron, but we are multi-chain. I guess the long-term vision for us is to build kind of a full ecosystem of launch and go-to-market related modules or tools in a way that projects that come and launch their token or distribute their token to communities, really centered around user acquisition. So a lot of it centered around how do you attract high quality community and quality users, and then building products around it that are very tied into driving liquidity and value into that ecosystem. So we are building a governance aggregate on top of Astroport, and we didn't want to be the protocol that builds out, you know, five differentiated products that are completely different. But that was something that was like the Convex on top of Astroport was a way that we saw the ability to drive liquidity into the ecosystem of launches that we're looking to do in terms of reinforcing. So yeah, I know that was a big kind of ramble, but it gives you a bit of an idea of the vision of Clipsfy to much more than just a launch pad, but an ecosystem geared towards supporting builders, creating opportunities, building communities, and connecting good quality projects with high quality users.
That's a great introduction and primer to the rest of this conversation. Carter, it's going to be hard to top that, but do you want to give a brief introduction to yourself? And for anyone who has been following Clipsfy, might not be aware of Shade, you want to give a brief introduction to Shade Protocol as well?
Sure. My name is Carter. I'm the lead researcher at Shade Protocol. Shade Protocol is building privacy-preserving DeFi on top of Secret Network. We fundamentally believe that without privacy, DeFi is incomplete. Things like front-running, which is a multi-billion dollar problem, things like sensitive liquidation price points, things like paying people their salaries or bringing businesses on-chain. There's so much value that can't be pushed to Web3 unless we have those security guarantees that come from privacy. So we've been building for 2+ years at Shade Protocol. We have a variety of products, and we continue to push forward and build even in lieu of the very, how shall I say this, not so pretty regulatory environment and posture towards open source privacy developers. But yeah, that's Shade Protocol, and super excited to have this conversation with Eclipse because at Shadeswap, we're always looking to support new projects, new pools, and allow users to safely, privately, and securely interact with different pools.
Yeah, and just another small plug for Shade. We just put out an announcement today for the next planned upgrade for Shade Protocol. For anyone who wants to check out that announcement, go check out the Shade Twitter. Just click our little logo at the top here and check it out. There's a ton of upgrades that are coming to the full app, some new product, some new... I just suggest you... I'm not going to get into it right now, but I suggest go check out our announcements there. That's some other really cool stuff going on with Shade. But today, focus is going to be on Clipsfy. And now that we've got, you know, a really good backstory on our guest today, can kind of start deep diving into the core of our conversation. And you mentioned some things, Simon, that kind of answered this question. But the question I have for you right now is, how did Clipsfy come about as an idea? And like, what led you to develop and design Clipsfy as you and we know it today?
mental illness. No, I'm kidding. You could claim that the early days of some level of mental illness building a launch pad in a bear market. quite an interesting journey for sure. It was quite interesting. It was this happened sort of around the collapse of Terra. There was a launchpad building on the on Terra ecosystem, and I'd been building the education for the Terra ecosystem, but I was also involved with a team building DeFi in Terra, who was not really making the best decisions, which made it really kind of challenging as someone who came on not as a co-founder but as a late kind of very core team member who always puts 100% into his work. And what was happening was I was pushing that and really saw the potential in this ecosystem of DeFi products, but it was just going in the wrong direction. And so I was very frustrated because I knew that I could put 100%, I could put like really hard work and really make the needle move. But I needed to kind of go off. I needed to go off and do my own thing, or go off and either join a team that, I felt could make the right decisions and go in the right, direction with this stuff, or I had to go and kind of start my own thing, but I wasn't sure where to kind of start or this sort of stuff. I joined a launchpad building on Terra as an advisor initially, and when the Terra collapse happened, the main kind of core team sort of disappeared, and I ended up taking over the platform and adopted like both the good and the bad that came with it, which was the tech, which is not as good as I thought it was initially, and investors on the cap table that they didn't have the money for it anymore. So I adopted this platform. I was like, okay, I'm going to rebrand it. I'm going to move it to the Cosmos ecosystem. I was trying to kind of figure out where that went. There was some stuff in the early days of Juno. And I was just trying to figure out exactly how do I take this thing. Part of the reason for going to Cosmos was that I was talking to a lot of projects, and at the time, just after the Terra collapse, and there was a lot of blockchains building on Cosmos that were looking for different ways to kind of launch. Airdrop meta had kind of died down a little bit by then, there was actually need for a launch pad. I talked to the ICF. They're like, think there's a really good need for a launch pad in this ecosystem. Talked to founders. It seemed to kind of be prevalent. So I started working on pitch decks, started pitching investors. I pitched like, I must have pitched 200 VCs easily, right? I remember how hard that was, and just went through a sea of no's, right? It was like, I remember like how hectic that was. Go to conferences, getting VCs, getting rejected. We closed a couple of angels, but it wasn't nothing kind of crazy significant. Couldn't lower the valuation either because we already had investors in the earlier round. I was kind of navigating this pretty much no funding. Trying to position in a bear market that was getting worse, not able to fundraise. But I was like just stubborn as a mule. So I just kind of got very integrated in every kind of area of the business. I was heavily on the marketing, heavily on BD. It was just kind of me and the developers. And I managed to get like a fair bit of traction, even though the market wasn't good and there was not many resources. Built up by a very strong network of BD in Cosmos and outside of Cosmos with investors and all sorts of partners. Really dug a lot more into the launch space and some of the issues that the launch space faced and ways that we could, I guess, help to improve that. The vision, even when I look back at a pitch deck from over a year and a half ago, the pitch deck hasn't, changed, but it hadn't. The vision was still the same, which was like solving the sustainability issues of launches, which isn't a short-term problem. It's a long-term problem. Very hard to do. It is very directly in the short term, but long term, it's a very big vision of like reshaping, a hub for that. Progressing forward, I ran into a lot of roadblocks because there was still the funding issue, there was the positioning issue. We're on Cosmos, but on Launchpad when FTX happened, it's just like everything was just like collapsing around, right? Then we got some kind of footholds. I was chatting a lot with Delphi Labs, and I've been chatting to them for quite some time. And I was the only one in Cosmos talking about launchpads. And I'm like, launchpads are actually, if done well, they're a very, very powerful tool because they're a strategic piece to ecosystems. Like if you can be the hub that, connects communities to projects, that helps to fundraise for projects, helps distribute tokens, gain awareness for projects. You can become the strategic pillar within even a chain, right? A chain wants to attract deal flow. VCs want deal flow. If you're that centerpiece that connects chains, deal flow, communities, marketing, launches, exchanges, everything, you become potentially the king of the room if you do it well, right? It's such an integral piece, but it was never done very well. And so we really saw the value of that, and they understood it as well. So we started talking about partnering Astroport and Eclipse in the Cosmos ecosystem and really finding synergies, as Eclipse being kind of like the de facto launchpad for Astroport in the ecosystem was the conversation I was having. And then we started... Juno was rapidly like kind of disintegrating at the time, where the community was still there, but the liquidity, everything, there was the projects, everything was kind of falling apart, and we there was no way we would ever been able to raise or grow from Juno as a chain. As sad as it is, the community was amazing, but there's no way like from there, like, you know, if Juno was to kind of have a lot of projects come and have projects that we could launch, we definitely would have done that and still kind of detain it. But at the time, it was just kind of like going downhill. And we talked to the Say team, and Say made a ton of promises. Like, this blockchain was like, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that for you. Like, you know, world of promises. It was, you know, shiny object. The reality was very different, right? We benefited from some growth of Say. We were one of the first projects on testnet and really helped to kind of grow a lot of, gain a lot of traction by positioning well on Say. Although some of it was a lot of airdrop farmers, but there was also value that came from it. And then we end up stuck in kind of a situation where we were still trying to fundraise, and we had all this stuff behind us and everything. But, you know, the VCs, they wanted, Say we're still a new chain, and they wanted to see backing of any sorts from the ecosystem, whether it was grants or whether it was investment from the chain, whether it was the chain pushing, or the chain being live and having traction. And so we ran into a lot of these issues where the chain wasn't live. We had to kind of launch. We wanted to kind of fundraise and do this sort of stuff, but we were kind of getting blocked. And that was a very painful journey for us, where we discovered that, you know, some chains are just there to kind of extract as much value in the short term as possible, and not necessarily there to actually support their ecosystems or their builders. And it wasn't just us. It was every single builder in the ecosystem and community, you know, suffered from that. But we, as stubborn as a mule, did not give up and kept going. And, you know, after, you know, we made the decision to move to Neutron, which was a much riskier play in some capacities from a short-term perspective, because Neutron itself plays a very different game. They play a very long game where they're building a lot of very high-quality DeFi pieces. Like, everything that's kind of coming for the most part to Neutron is like a high quality DeFi project that's focused on the long term. And so we're like, okay, we're a launch pad. We have to get live, have to do this sort of stuff, but we're in a chain that's going to move slower, but it really aligned with our values for long-term kind of sustainability. And so we positioned on Neutron. We finally kind of started fundraising, announced our launch just before Christmas, and then, you know, started to build traction to that launch. And that's where everything kind of went kind of ballistic. Build a couple of really smart campaigns that were able to kind of leverage all this growth stuff, brought in Cowells, closed out our rounds, you know, went across five different launch pads, had quite a very successful launch. So that was a very big kind of moment. And then, and this is a very interesting piece, afterwards was probably the biggest learning of all the journey, which was evolving from being a very small team. You know, at the time we'd brought on Shannon as COO, CFO. We had Tom on marketing. We had the mods that had kind of joined and helped support, but it was still a very, very small team. And it's where we ran into kind of the growing pains of going from a small organization to then having to grow into a large organization. Like, the needs just kind of went crazy. We had so much hype on us that we were getting deal flow come in from every corner, like very high quality deal flow. And we quickly found out it became almost, for just a short period of time, it was like, it was just so much. You were just, you know, having to talk to, you know, 80 projects, and it was pretty crazy. And, you know, that was quite an interesting journey of like, okay, we now need to actually scale. And that was kind of like a big kind of next step and evolution of like building a team and getting the team to work together and finding all the building blocks and having to manage like so many components of the company, like tech and marketing and business development, and have everything working together. But it's been a very interesting ride, a very good ride. And we're blessed to be I guess, super connected in the space. We have incredible like deal flow, incredible connections across the whole space, and things are coming together piece by piece every day. It's improving. So sorry for this super long ramble. I think I probably took 20 minutes of this call chatting about this, but I thought I'd share that journey because it's quite an interesting one.
No, dude, I was glued to my screen listening as you're talking. The only extension of that question I have is, what do you think are some of the main ways that Eclipsefy differs from other competing products? You had mentioned there were five or other six launch pads that were trying to raise or do similar stuff as you guys were, rounding out your raise. I'm curious, what are the main differences between Eclipsefy and other launch pads? I know you guys say you want to be a hub for these launches. So I'm curious, what are some of the key differentiators that someone might notice? Just in case you are talking, I cannot hear you, and it looks like you're muted.
Damn it! I was muted. I did this over the last week or two with the team, actually, where I broke down Eclipse's not just product roadmap, but the overall vision and positioning across multiple phases. Because from a positioning perspective, we have a very clear kind of evolving, roadmap of how Eclipse builds on more USPs as time goes by. I would say right now, if you took Eclipse right now and what Eclipse is doing, I think some of our biggest USPs are around the amount of support that we actually provide to builders and kind of our alignment. And I know this is necessarily a feature USP, but it's a really big one because there's a lot of launch pads out there that their game is just about flipping tokens, right? And I know a lot of people engage with launch pads for that, but like every partner they work with is seen as a flip. Right? So it's extract as much value as possible, flip it and move on to the next. And we know most launchers, we've interacted with most of them have no due diligence, right? So they have no due diligence, they implement refund policies, and then they just kind of, they look at the socials, they look at the tokenomics, and they look at kind of, who their backers are. And that's the extent of the DD. They don't really care. They're just going to pump through the numbers and flip tokens. And the community, for the most part, like communities that interact sometimes in those launch pads, they're okay with that, right? Like, they've got refund policies or things like that. Like, they're there to flip, but we're building something completely different. Our focus here is like, how do we empower builders that are building things that are going to be successful, of course, but things that have a bit more of a longer time horizon. And then we're also big on DD. Like, we have very, very strong due diligence department, which is like looking at different kind of elements of the products that we're launching and going like, it's not just about the token performance is obviously very important, like all this sort of stuff, but we're also looking at the products. We're looking at, is this going to be around in 6 months, 12 months, right? We're not wanting to, we see how much is launched through launch pads. That's literally just someone who's on their sixth startup who just knows how to market. He's writing the next narrative, and we look under the hood and you see there's not much there. It's just sold very well. So that's the current, I would say, positioning for us as a launch pad is the current phase. We have obviously things like we've got a very, very strong KOL network, which has been like very, very coveted in the space currently. We're getting a lot of people wanting to tap into that. And we have good networks. But that's sort of the current now of the USP. Going forward into phase two, phase three, phase four, I'm not going to break them down completely individually. There's elements such as modularity, which is a big one for us. And modularity means offering different launch mechanisms to projects, which opens us up away from just IDO. So recently we've been doing a few node sales. That's just currently another implementation of a different mechanism for launchers that is possible to be done. But going forward, things like launch pools and overflow farming and different mechanisms for bootstrapping is really important, especially if you're in Cosmos and you're wanting to launch a roll-up, for example. They don't necessarily want to do an IDO, right? Like, it's just not within their legal, regulatory, or even interests. So you've got to have different mechanisms to kind of facilitate that. Other things that we bring in as well is Equinox, which is a governance aggregator. And the goal of Equinox is really to have voting power in Astroport to be able to drive liquidity into the ecosystem. It's a little bit of a longer play because it's centered around, I guess, Cosmos or Astro or kind of the Neutron ecosystem in some capacity. But it is a play in which we can, especially with Cosmos projects, it gives us the ability to actually give project's liquidity after their launch through this mechanism, and it actually enhances the whole ecosystem. We have the biggest one that I'm interested, that I'm excited about for the future of those USP, and something that's still being developed in with different partners, is reputation scores. For us, I think the way that we win over our competitors in the long term, there's many, many different things in many different ways. The way that we win over the long term is really being able to create the community for projects. So it's, you know, obviously offering really high quality projects to the community, but then curating the community so that, like, you know, Launchpad can any Launchpad out there, like some of the big Launchpads can say, hey, we've got 100,000 users, we've got 200,000 users. But how many of those users come in and engage on socials? How many of those users actually become community members? How many of them actually use the product or even know about the product? Most of the time, even with some of the past co-launches we've done, our community was actually more involved with the socials of the projects that we were launching. And a lot of those users just kind of flip, right? And so going forward, the goal for us is like, how do we build on-chain and off-chain reputation scoring into our system and incentive mechanisms that aligns the interests of high quality users that, you know, people are, you know, using the products, they're staking, they're holding the tokens, or they're farming, or they're doing different behaviors. And it enables us to go to projects, to high quality projects, and go, rather than shooting in the dark, why don't you come and tap into a very high quality community here? Like users that are actually going to become your community members. And then the proposition for deal flow becomes very different. And you can actually really have a better selling proposition for much bigger projects even, and become kind of a, create this kind of unfair advantage moat and community, which is the goal for us. So I know there's a lot there. There's a lot of moving pieces, but that's sort of how I see the rollout for Eclipsefy, with many other things, obviously, that I've got no time to discuss today, obviously.
That was phenomenal. I'm so happy I asked these questions to start the conversation, because, like, first off, these are the questions I personally really love digging into, because it's a way to get a glimpse into like the iteration and innovation that we see in this space. And I think your history and kind of that you mentioned earlier in the space and what you've seen and all these different things that you learned along the way and wanted to implement and change, you know, to improve Eclipsefy's prospects in the future. I think this is really interesting to understand this backstory and to better, I guess, contextualize some of those unique value propositions that Eclipsefy has, especially out of the gate. I love what you guys are bringing to the table with Eclipsefy, and I think this is a perfect segue into talking about our recent partnership announcement. For those who didn't see the announcement about a month ago, a little less than a month ago, Shape Protocol and Eclipsefy announced a strategic partnership to help these new quality projects that are going to be launching with Eclipsefy to be able to build sustainable liquidity and empower their user base with the privacy that, you know, we both projects believe we all deserve in DeFi. From Shape Protocol's perspective, you know, we've built a privacy-preserving DeFi ecosystem that offers a wide variety of utility. We service a wide variety of use cases for tokens and their users within DeFi. And being able to partner with a project like Eclipsefy is a phenomenal way for us to synergistically tap into the growth and momentum that we both got with our product suites and these new projects looking to launch quality products. You know, this is both great for Shade Protocol to help us expand the immediate use of that Shade Protocol product suite. Gives us a better chance to educate and help protect new and existing users from value extraction from on-chain finance. That's one of the biggest benefits that privacy provides to within DeFi, is this protection from value extraction. Carter eloquently discussed some of those earlier when he introduced himself, being able to have front-running resistance, private liquidation points so people can't hunt your liquidation points, being able to have private governance power, you know, all these different things. And, you know, interestingly enough, it's kind of related to this partnership, but Neutron has been quite the hotbed of activity for developers and users of all types. And to your point earlier, Simon, there are a lot of really high quality DeFi applications that are being built and launched on Neutron right now. And it's kind of shown itself to be a thriving layer of utility. And this is the partnership between Eclipse Phi and Shade Protocol is one of the many synergistic relationship that Shade has, is, and kind of will be building with Neutron and its DApp layer. Before I hand the mic back over to Simon to get thoughts on the partnership, Carter, I kind of want to get your thoughts here. We didn't really go into the specifics of the partnership. If you want to touch on that, you're welcome to. But given the information that we've talked about in relation to Eclipse Phi and the information that's public about the partnership, that's all there. If anyone wants to go check out the announcement post, we'll put it under this Twitter space at the end of the space. But it was announced on April 4th. But we've had this information out. We actually just seeded pretty recently the first initial chunk of collaboratively built liquidity between Shade and the Eclipse token, which we initially seeded with 500K liquidity. Want to give you the mic just for a few minutes, get your thoughts on the partnership. What are you most excited about in relation to this strategic partnership?
Yeah, thanks, Fred. I think that if you think about like the 2018 to 2024 era of DeFi, I think a lot of it was protocols kind of operating in silos. There was the traditional model of project needs liquidity, so it goes out and, you know, chucks the emissions at a pool and tries to attract liquidity. And I think that methodology, it has its benefits, but what I'm increasingly excited about, and I think Cosmos honestly is innovating on this, is protocol to protocol market making relationships and bootstrapping. We've done this now with 10 plus different protocols across the board. And like working with a launch pad like Eclipse, there's a really unique opportunity. New projects, they have the network effect of having their own community of users, and there's like an energy that always surrounds new projects, but they really need liquidity in order to kind of service that demand. And it's hard to bootstrap liquidity. It's hard to convince mercenary capital to come and pair up and take that risk. Now, the beauty with our relationship with Eclipse is Shade Protocol, assuming it's a good project on the other side, we're willing to take that risk. We're willing to loan out liquidity, match it with a partner. And just like that, we can bootstrap $500,000, you know, anywhere from like a $50,000 pool to $1 million pool with the snap of a finger, with two protocols directly teaming up. No emissions need to be, you know, given to some external actors. It's two protocols teaming up. And for us, the advantage of this relationship for Shade Protocol is we pull in a bunch of new users into the Shade app for the first time, the folks that are seeking out and wanting to buy that token. It's also super advantageous for our trader base, that they like their privacy. They don't want to go to a different chain to trade and give up that privacy. And so by continuing to service interesting and good projects, we're also kind of satiating the demand of that community. And like on the Eclipse side, those new projects, they get bootstrapped liquidity. Their user base that maybe wants to slowly accumulate a position privately are able to do that with Shade Protocol. And we're able to build out this really interesting sustainability flywheel. We have essentially like the fees from these pools are going to be split between the Eclipse platform as well as the new projects that are going to be launching with us. So we're kind of offering just like this killer deal, because we value the energy and the new users, and those protocols, they're looking for sustainability as they expand out their liquidity. So it's a really unique type of symbiosis. I've never seen anyone try to create this type of intimate symbiosis where everyone's giving up like a little bit of something in the process, and we end up meeting in the middle, something that's truly powerful and special. So you can keep your eyes on this relationship over time. I think it's going to prove to be valuable. And as we approach, you know, whenever the next market cycle comes, I think it's just going to be so cool to see it play out.
Yeah, one of the big things. Oh, go ahead, Simon.
No, guys, I've spoken enough so far.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, when I think of the pipeline, like the process of a new project launching and getting integrated into kind of the simplest parts of DeFi, you know, your spot markets, access to liquid staking derivatives, setting yourself up for being able to participate, have these tokens participate in maybe more complex or more restrictive types of DeFi products, like leverage products that just have higher, more stricter requirements, and being able to help improve that pipeline, because it's not necessarily an easy pipeline to navigate, especially when most of these projects, they're really mostly concerned with that core utility of that token. Now, it could be something simple like a meme coin where its utility is, you know, to have fun and just be purely speculative. But then there's other, maybe more, there are other tokens that maybe have a more legitimate utility that's core to a service that a product is providing, and being able to access these pipelines, especially in the beginning, can be definitely hard. And so personally, I think that this partnership is going to prove to be very beneficial for these new projects coming in that are looking to capture this energy and momentum of money, attention coming back into kind of the blockchain industry and crypto, and being able to have like a really solid pipeline to be able to move into like legitimacy.
I want to give a little bit of an analogy here because... Oh, so my internet's a bit flaky. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Yep.
It keeps a bit of an overlap. So if I spoke over you, the internet's a bit overlap. I want to give a bit of an analogy here of like, if you think about like centralized exchanges, a bit of how they work with multiple exchanges, how you have like primary and secondary venues and things like that. Like, it's a really important process in like terms of attracting arb volume and tapping into different communities. The way that I see this really importantly in Cosmos is that, you know, we want to focus heavily, obviously, on, you know, Neutron or Astroport and hopefully Duality as an alternative to centralized exchanges. That would be like the amazing goal. This is a long-term plan. But then it's also helpful to have different communities or different things. So like Shade Protocol, being a privacy-focused trading platform, is also very powerful in terms of being able to offer that to new projects. Now, when a new project comes along, it's very hard for us to go, hey, you know, come and list your token on this. You got to provide, pay for liquidity on this platform and this platform, this platform. Like they're choosing, you know, a specific venue that they're going to go to based on, you know, how much is it going to cost me? Am I going to get volume? Sorry, am I going to get liquidity? And so that's part of our proposition as well with Astroport and Equinox and everything. It's being able to drive liquidity into Astro so that we're able to actually influence the listing decisions and the listing locations for DEXs within an ecosystem, taking even maybe a Cosmos chain that may go list on another DEX, but because we have the ability to drive liquidity or to add extra benefit value, maybe we can influence those decisions and lead to a flywheel effect of volume and liquidity and users. That's the goal, is like, how do you kick off that flywheel? What I see is powerful with this, with what Shade's proposing for this this partnership, and you know, it is true, it is optional as well, like it's a conversation, but it's very powerful because we can go to projects and go, here's another community, especially in the next bull run, here's a whole bunch of people that want to trade privately, and they're willing to actually match your liquidity so that you're not having to go and spend, you know, 300,000-500,000 USDT on the other side of the book to bootstrap a pool. So it gives kind of the projects an extra base, which may lead to more arbitrage volume as well. So it's a really win-win for kind of everyone involved. Obviously, it's you have to manage this well from our side, from Shade's side, from the project side, because you know launches are great, but also can be problematic if you see, you know, if you're taking the liquidity risk and the project is, you know, not necessarily a good project that doesn't perform over the long term, then, you know, you're absorbing that liquidity risk as well, right? You're giving maybe investors an opportunity to exit. So that's something that has to be managed. and it's something that has to be looked at with each project. And that's where the due diligence that Eclipse does is really important for this, where, you know, we're going to be always looking at projects that we believe in from our due diligence, the long-term focused projects, not projects that are, you know, going to be too heavy on that. And I think long-term, the way that we want to kind of navigate is how do we reduce project reliance on toxic actors, right? I think that's something that, you know, Eclipsefy over the long term, if everything comes into line and everything that we are working towards comes to fruition, which, you know, we believe it will, is we should be able to create a very powerful engine to be able to bootstrap projects and high quality projects and reduce the reliance on maybe some of the predatory kind of behaviors. But with Shade, I think we're going to be able to do some really cool stuff. And I think it's going to increase volumes, increase ARB, increase liquidity for these projects, and then create more of a community of private traders that get access to the same opportunities and they're not excluded because their privacy preference.
Love it. And one kind of like mental model I have on this is there's one extreme where you have centralized exchanges where new project launches, they'll be like, hey, here's this massive listing fee and you have to pay for your own market makers, right? Essentially, centralized exchanges have really been almost, how should I say this, oppositional to new project launches because due diligence is a huge problem for them. So their way of kind of getting around the due diligence problem is we're just going to make it extremely expensive to list and you have to be able to know the right people. And that's kind of how they kind of offset individual project risk is by having like a very high cost to entry. Now, decentralized exchanges, they come in and say, wait a second, there's a lot of like demand and opportunity, but potentially additional risk on the table with these project launches. So we're going to support them quicker than centralized exchanges. Ends up happening is inevitably a DEX, you know, points emissions at pools as they start supporting these new token launches quicker than other people do. But slowly over time, they start to incur that cost and kind of the same problem with the centralized exchange where maybe they take too big of a risk or point emissions too long towards a project or a pool that doesn't actually have a good, you know, long-term prospect, slowly starts to go down. And then of course, like the DEX token gets dragged down by maybe that bad decision. And then I think what we see next, the next evolution after that is you see DEXs actually go the wrong direction. I think we're seeing like, I think Osmosis does this, where they kind of say, you know what, we're not going to point incentives at anyone. We're going to be more focused on kind of like your institutional market makers within a DeFi context. We're only going to be focused on like tier ones. If you're a smaller project, like good luck. Like the days of us kind of pointing emissions at smaller projects, like those days are kind of coming to an end. But what that does is it opens up an opportunity for DEXs like Shadeswap to like still support that market segment of projects, but then we're stuck with that same risk of like the due diligence and being able to pick projects that have good long-term prospects. And I think this is where Eclipsefy comes in. I think if Eclipsefy is able to have harsh due diligence and is really good at filtering out and only supporting high quality projects, then it reduces the risk, at least on Shade Protocol side, when we aggressively pursue the liquidity deals and support the partners. And then we end up, like I said, like serving a market segment that other DEXs aren't necessarily willing to take the risk on. So I see this long term as extremely powerful. It's an underserved segment of the market, which is high risk launches at the beginning and getting liquidity available rapidly. And I look forward to Shade Protocol servicing that. And it's on the back of all the hard work that Eclipsefy is doing.
I'll give you a bit of alpha as well, if you want. Because it's going to be interesting how we play this long term, and this is some alpha. I've dropped this maybe once in the community Telegram, but I've never talked about this openly. But over the next,
I was saying, Carter, get ready to hit the trap board.
No. Go for it.
So, as Eclipse, one issue that we've run into, and this has kind of been part of the mission for quite some time. I knew this was going to happen in terms of a fork in the road, is that we are trending towards more high quality projects as the main focus of the primary launch pad, right? Like the issue is like you fall in this funny basket where you can go like It's funny because you see some launch pads. I think Pilot did launch recently of a token called, I think, I can't remember the name of it, NAMI, and that went really well. I think they raised like $2 million. It was a very like small ecosystem project, but because they had that like the community of QG behind it, they were able to raise a large amount of money and bootstrap that. And so that's one side of the launch pad being an ecosystem launch pad, which is very attractive for us on Neutron. Like, we want to be able to launch these projects that are, you know, actually believe in them quite well. But some of these projects need more time to develop, like to get to the stage where they're building hype or they're maybe going to get listed on a centralized exchange or all this sort of stuff. On the flip side, you've got a whole multi-chain community of people that want projects that are kind of bigger calibers, you know, like more towards the Coinless level or trending towards that direction where they've got, you know, large communities, big backers, and they're, you know, going to be listed on a big SEX or, you know, they're going to, you know, do something big. And so you kind of end up in a funny position as a launchpad where you go, well, which one do you go for? You can't really do both because, you know, you get this kind of funny reputation thing where big projects want to launch around big projects. People will expect big projects. And if you launch small projects, you run into kind of some issues, right? So the way that I see this working at Eclipse is actually splitting up the pad, not into two separate necessarily pads, but kind of having a sub umbrella, having a more community governed permissionless launch platform, I think is the way that we'll likely go in the kind of mid to long term. I don't think it's even that long away, at least starting to rear its head. The idea is that the flagship launch platform, which is Eclipse, which would have kind of this like premier, vetting, very heavy DD, everything, we're kind of moving in the direction of launching chains or launching roll-ups or launching dApps as well, but going kind of the bigger, higher premium quality that already has that kind of community, already has kind of big backers, going kind of in that direction. And then the permissionless launchpad, like setting up very strong still DD processes, but that are more, like community run. So there's been some modeling behind the scenes for like what a curation marketplace would look like or how you can kind of take some of the models that Fjord has implemented and improve them towards being more transparent or more powerful. So we're still in ideation phase of how we kind of deal with that fork in the road, but we want to be able to offer a platform towards pretty much all projects that come through the ecosystem, but then you got to be able to rate them or scale them publicly so people know, okay, these are, you know, these have been like done very high due diligence and these are maybe not as good, or maybe they're kind of memes. And so they kind of get hidden behind a fold, right? So the goal is for us, like, how do we build an eco? Again, we want to build an ecosystem of launches, which isn't just a centralized platform dealing with, you know, a couple launches a month and then nothing. We want to actually build out like and be the go-to place for launches. But that's where we need to have some level of separation and figure out how to navigate that. So this will be also helpful for Shade, right? Because it may be like, not just maybe even some of these bigger players may be difficult to get into some locations or whatever it is, or maybe that's also advantageous. Maybe they have the money for liquidity, so they're not so much in that need. But then you're also going to have the permissionless launchpad that's going to, like, the goal for us is to really curate, like, how do we really focus on making this community curation really powerful and accurate and strong? And maybe that will give a very good gauge to Shade as well. It's like, you know, these medium-sized community projects that have high-quality DD scores because they've got a good team or good product or good tokenomics, and we see them as being players in the field, and that gives an opportunity for higher levels of listings through these tokens. So that's sort of a lot of alpha that I just dropped on a call. But yeah, gives you a bit of maybe an idea of some of the.
I think it totally makes sense. I think a lot of products evolve in this direction where you start with tight curation, you see the demand, you see that there's like tertiary demand that is more permissionless in nature, and then you make sure the platform can support both. So I'm super looking forward to seeing you guys evolve into like a very highly selective set on one side, but then also supporting those permissionless launches. And then if there's a pipeline of relationships, you know, between Shade and those projects on both sides, I mean, the door is open to that optionality and supporting them. So super, super cool and stoked to hear about that.
I think it ties into what you said before, because it isn't necessarily the DD isn't strong on the permissionless side. If we optimize it well, we may be able to get to a position where the DD is very strong, but it changes the size of the projects. Like you talk about Osmosis is gearing towards institutional players. Like maybe there's ecosystem projects that are wonderful and incredible, but they're hard to it's hard to launch, a Binance-backed layer one or something like massive, or, you know, not saying that we're at that stage yet, but it's hard to launch a big kind of project next to a ecosystem project that might only have a pretty tight-knit community or a small amount of traction. But they still need a bootstrap. They still need to get to market, right? And we may not be able to offer them the same hands-on support as a big project, or maybe we can build out systems for that as well. But the idea is but curators can do that as well. Fjord does this as well, where actually the curators end up taking on a very agency kind of model because they're, they want to build a name for themselves. And this is part of the idea of curation. It's like, if you can build reviews or reputation within the curation space, people can build up reputations where, they want to have successful launches. So anyway, that's a whole nother rabbit train, but I agree. I think, that could bring in some more volume of launch for Shade, and it helps to ensure that we're curating or we're actually doing DD on projects. Maybe it's more at scale, and maybe it's able to do it more decentralized in a more decentralized fashion, because we are decentralized finance. We want to be a decentralized finance platform, not a centralized finance platform.
Yeah. I think it's over time, Cosmos and the horizontal scalability of it is only going to continue to get more absurd. I think people are just sleeping on the fact that we're going to have, 10,000 blockchains before we know it. Think about map of zones and how many chains and tokens existed in Cosmos 3 years ago versus right now. And we haven't even experienced another secular bull market. So I think that'll be a really big challenge for Eclipse, is how does it scale the analysis and due diligence when things go absolutely bonkers? And maybe there has to be some sort of, decentralized tokenized researcher platform tied to Eclipse One. I don't know, but if you can kind of come up with a scalable way to do that curation, that would be insane powerful.
Yeah, curation marketplace. I think that's the way to do it. It's just getting the specifics of it, which is the idea of independent analysis is either groups or individuals who can bid on projects and build reputations, right? If you think about that as a concept, even in Web3, it could be incredible of how you just can. I've seen similar kind of platforms, but nothing kind of to that scale. The idea is mm-hmm. if you the only really way of doing a proper permissionless platform is completely everyone has to do their own DD. Fjord Foundry has kind of a centralized curation system where you have a number of kind of white labeled curators that can kind of put their name behind stuff, but that runs into its own issues as well, and it's not quite that level of scalability. But Fjord Foundry is the second most successful launchpad in kind of history of crypto, so that's says something as well.
Well, yeah, if you think about it, I think a lot of the researcher and due diligence platforms to date are probably more focused on investors as the target audience, which is of course is a default audience, but I would foresee as things scale out that eventually it's actually the DEXs and the exchanges that would be willing to essentially purchase or subsidize a decentralized platform of researchers that are building out those due diligence reports and scoring. I'm not entirely sure, but that's the mental model shift is what does the platform look like if it's the protocols that are the customers instead of the investors as it pertains to research and due diligence within a curation scoring system?
Well, if you've got a launch coming out, and I appreciate that we're going over time, but if you've got a project coming up that has to launch its token, right, the project is investing tokens or resources or things anyway into listings, into marketing, into all this sort of stuff. So if you're going to go, if your protocol, let's say you're a small ecosystem protocol and you're going to launch your token and you believe in your metrics of what you're building, your code, everything like this, and you're going to the Eclipse permissionless launchpad, the UI, the UX should be laid out in terms of like curate, like projects that have labeled curators and ratings of these curators. So essentially what, like in my mind, the way that it kind of looks at a high level kind of conceptual nature is the project would go to a marketplace where, you know, it can maybe bid on curators, or curators can bid on the projects, and they would go and then incentivize, maybe in a way that's more long-term focused to align the incentives, curators to kind of come in and do a curation and put their stamp of approval behind, you know, the project in some capacity, right? Think of it like a, almost like a decentralized auditor platform, but for research. You know, not necessarily a separate platform, but it can be part of it. And then you get a stamp of approval, and maybe that bumps you up the ratings on the website in terms of like, hey, you've got a curator with a rate who's got this track record or this rating who's going to float to the top. And anyone who doesn't have a curator is going to kind of be in a high risk section, right? In a non-curator section, which is like high risk at your own peril. And then, you know, if this is done well, which it's got a lot of, you know, engineering that needs to go behind making this work, you know, the like engineering, not in terms of tech, but in terms of like ensuring that it's, you know, risk mitigated and stuff. Like your concept nature would be like, hey, like a project should be able to like, you should be able to create this relationship between projects and communities where, you know, people can kind of get an idea of like the due diligence behind it. It may not be as foolproof as a fully curated platform, but it may be better than like just shooting darts in the dark. You know what I mean?
I love it.
So that's sort of my idea behind it.
I also think there's like a lot of really smart community members that float between different ecosystems, different protocols, different dApps that like, if they had an ability to monetize what they already do for fun, essentially it's curation and like deep dives into projects. I think there's no telling how powerful that type of platform could be. And you could create an even, yeah, just like a whole social layer around rating projects, talking about projects, doing deep dives on projects. You could break it into like a research layer, a social layer, like who knows, but
I have friends who built a platform like that. It was different to what I'm thinking through here, but a platform called Cirida, where they got a whole range of analysts together to create kind of like a bit of an analyst community that would give ratings to projects mostly that were already live, which is pretty cool. But it's slightly separate to that, right? I guess that's a separate platform. We were more thinking that'd be attached to the pad right. Itself, but like who knows? You never know with this stuff. Sometimes you build things and you find product market fit on accidental builds. It's quite interesting.
Love it. Well, Rod, I'll hand it back over to you. Thanks for letting us fall down the rabbit hole of ideation. But that's what happens when you start with the problem, which is exchanges have a hard time deciding where to put liquidity risk or listing risk. And that's a problem. And right now, people's solution to that problem is raise the barrier to entry with cost, or just kind of ignore that, you know, market segment by just not pointing incentives at them. This leaves a hole in the market. Shade's trying to solve that by kind of aggressively having a different liquidity matching structure to help support these projects and get them onboarded. But the risk is still there. We mitigate that by partnering with a good launch pad. But then to your point, there's going to be an insane number of projects that are going to launch in a permissionless fashion. And so then it becomes, how do we solve the scalability of the measurement? So what a fun little rabbit hole that was.
No, I really enjoyed it. I love when you guys let me take a break from talking as well. One of the things I couldn't help but think about, you know, as we're talking about, or like when I'm trying to think about how Shade has better prepared itself for a partnership like this with EclipseFi, is, you know, we've had a lot of learning lessons of our own along this. It's been just over a year now that ShadeSwap has been launched, and we've been the initial trading venue for a variety of different native and non-native tokens, both for better and worse. And we've been able to see what needed to be done, at least from our side, to be able to support, just from an infrastructure perspective, these large new influxes of users to our site. Being better prepared both from an infrastructure standpoint, but also kind of coupling this with the upcoming upgrades to the Shade ecosystem. I think Shade is going to be very well positioned to be able to support, you know, these new projects coming down the pipeline. And so, you know, one of the big things that we've observed and acknowledged, at least within our product suite, is, and Carter can probably discuss this a bit more eloquently, but like, you know, privacy inherently has a bit more friction to it than just general public chains. And so we've heard lots of feedback about people that love what we've built, love the functionality, love the utility, but there exists a little bit extra friction that's associated with privacy and managing that privacy. And so, you know, we're very highly focused on improving both that user experience from the privacy perspective, but also being able to accurately paint a picture of the activity that's going on within our private DeFi ecosystem so people can make educated decisions as they're using our product. So I'm personally really pumped for the positioning that Shade is in and, you know, the positioning for this partnership. I know we're Let's a little it. Over time.
Let's do it.
Yeah. we're about 7-8 minutes over time. I think we're, Carter, unless you have, unless you got a hop, I think we're cool to go for maybe a few more minutes. I've got one more big question for them, and that's it.
As long as Simon still has time.
Simon?
Yeah, it's fine. It's like 1 a.m. here. I'll be fine. Oh. So I've got no meetings after this. So.
So hopefully nothing planned after this. Okay. So, you know, we've talked a ton about the benefits and the benefits of Eclipsefy, what you guys are uniquely bringing to the table, you know, why we're excited about Shadeswap being a trading venue and just an ecosystem to be able to support Eclipsefy and the projects that it's looking to help nurture and push out into the world. Maybe a little bit of extra alpha, if you have any. Do you guys have any projects coming down the pipeline that you're personally really excited about? Anything that you guys think is promising, that you think is going to do well? Obviously, you might have a little bit of bias, but just if you can share anything, we'd be interested to hear.
Yeah, we have a couple. So we split into two kind of sections. We've been doing some node sales recently. We are doing node sales, which it's sort of interesting. So some, you know, part of the community really likes the node sales. Part of the community doesn't like the node sales as much. There's a lot of like very in the space. There's a lot of people that are very I guess like node sale enthusiasts, and they love the nodes. And I think it's node sales are going to continue. So we have to, you know, position ourselves as well to be accepting of the fact that some of these big projects are looking at node sales as ways to kind of further decentralize the network. Sure, there's a lot of projects as well that are sort of fake node sales where they don't need nodes, but they sell nodes. But I think it's a great also way of projects decentralizing the network, and also is kind of in some capacity a different way to fundraise, even if you need nodes. You're selling nodes. It's a little bit different to selling tokens necessarily. So it plays a little bit of a different like positioning in terms of like big chains or big ecosystems or infrastructure plays that have to figure out ways around regulations, but they still also want nodes to to decentralize the network. So I think the nodes, we've got two coming up. We may have a third, but the timings are a bit funny with the node sales because they're just like super compressed. We got Rivals that's happening at the moment, actually. That's actually one I'm really excited for. They got a really, really professional team behind them. I actually have a good friend who's recently joined them in the marketing, and they're really strong operators. They're building a rollout on Dimension, and they're focusing on data and AI, which I know is obviously very hyped in the space, but there's some really, really cool stuff coming from those guys, and they're really, really solid guys with good backing. So I'm excited for them. We're doing another node sale as well. It's just open whitelist called Carve, which is another AI layer, AI project, but it has that's focused on the gaming side, that has a hell of a lot of games behind them, big traction, backed by Tribe Cap and a lot of big tier ones. So that's the node sales. We do have a couple of IDOs coming up that I'm really excited for. The only issue at the moment with the IDOs is that the market isn't super hot. So, you know, we've got a couple of really good projects and some that, you know, will do well despite the market. But we also have to be like conscious of like timing of when we do launches and things like that. As you know, some people might want launches in 2 weeks, but if you launch into kind of the down market, you might end up with the wrong effects. But there's a few of them. One of the ones I'm the most, I think, is going to do, you know, one of the best, I think, especially in this market, is Mixi AI. They've been building for about 3 years. Pretty solid team. They've got a lot of like really, really big experience building projects and had, you know, projects in Web2 and Web3 as well, and had successful tokens. It's building a, it's another AI project, but it's, they're building a gaming engine. For AI, they can actually build games using a few lines of code. So since you could come to the console and go like, generate this, and you could actually create a game from AI code. So that's really, really cool as far as like, you know, the tech. Really big backers as well. They've been building for a couple of years. And these guys know how to market. They know how to position. They know this sort of stuff. So when the switch gets flicked, it's going to be a really big one. And the ones I'm really excited for as well that maybe haven't got as much like social traction, but have got a lot of potential. So Kinetics on Carver is one I'm really excited to launch. They are the like DeFi hub, perps hub for Carver, but they're also going to be, I don't want to drop too much alpha, I don't know. But they've got a lot of, these guys are the team behind QuickSwap and Luna Digital Assets. So these guys have been around the space, like the incubated Polygon. They've been around the space for a long time. They have a lot of big whale connections. They know what they're doing. I think they're going to be really sick. They know how to run a DEX. So they're going to be a really exciting one as well. And then we've got a whole range of other projects that some are announced, some not announced in the backlog, but we've got some exciting stuff coming up. Some really exciting stuff coming up in a couple months. There's a few like big projects, but that's sort of multi-chain. I'm still excited for more Cosmos projects. That is sort of, things are a little bit early at the moment. I feel Cosmos has been a little bit slower recently. There's projects that are just not at the, I guess, right at the stage where we're going to start like pushing into their launches. But it will all come at once, I think. I think it's just going to kind of build up, and then we'll have a huge influx of projects. So we are building for the long term. We're obviously still kind of, you know, going deal flow, DD, going through like so many decks every day and everything. But again, I want to reiterate that our focus is long term. We are playing, we have to do short term things, but we're positioning for the long term, not just playing the short game.
Well, Simon, I truly appreciate all the alpha that you shared, and I appreciate the time that you shared with us as well today. We went about 15 minutes over. I think we can go ahead and wrap this up just because we went a little over. For anyone who wants to follow all of EclipseFi's announcements, keep up to date, highly suggest following their Twitter account. It's right there up at the top of the Twitter space. Make sure to follow them. If you want to stay up to date with everything going on in Shade ecosystem, make sure to follow the Shade Protocol account up here. I just want to say thank you, Simon. Thank you, Carter, for taking time today, joining us for this conversation. I thought it was awesome. Personally, I feel like I learned a ton about, the kind of like boots on the ground, what it's like to be helping projects, quality projects bootstrap their token and kind of get that out into the world of DeFi. And I'm really excited about the partnership between EclipseFi and Shade and what's to come in the future.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate you guys. You guys are absolute shippers, and I really look forward to future stuff. So amazing. I'm going to get some sleep now and enjoy your day, guys, and look forward to more catch-ups in the near future.
Thank you. Happy building. And as always, as we like to close with, there's plenty of room in the shade.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these token knocks. They probing this bear, flexing broken knives. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then the NLE
long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known a politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of denolay stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Eats, tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Spaces.